It's Monday, and on Monday around this time, we chat to an expert on something. An interesting one today. Over the past few weeks, thieves have stolen art from shuttered museums in Europe as COVID-19 forces people to stay at home. Police are currently looking for artworks by Van Gogh and Sir Anthony Van Dyck and Annabelle Carracci and Salvatore Rosa. And they were taken in two separate heists. Other thieves were foiled in their attempt to steal a priceless crucifixion painting by the Flemish master Peter Bruegel the Younger in northern Italy. So we thought it might be interesting to invite an art expert in, or rather an art crime expert. Penelope Jackson has written two books on art crime, and she was about to start a third when lockdown forced her home to Tauranga. She joins me now there. Hi, Penelope.
Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Yeah, good. Really looking forward to spending some time with you. I should point out you are the writer in residence at the University of Auckland when Level 4 lockdown began. I was just wondering yesterday what happened to people who had residencies. So does it get paused or cancelled, or what's the story?
Well, I think it's really cancelled. I mean, in my case, I was about a week into the five-week residency when, you know, lockdown happened. The problem is places like the fabulous Michael King Writers' Centre is that they've got their whole year timetabled. So I was lucky, I guess I got a week. I think the next couple of writers didn't get any. Perhaps they'll be rescheduled because this is obviously unprecedented. But yeah, look, it was really frustrating because I was so excited and honoured to have the residency, the University of Auckland one combined with the Michael King Writers' Centre residency, and then only to get a week of it completed was, you know, pretty frustrating. But yeah.
What were you working on?
Well, I'm working on a new book, and it's about the art of copying art. So copies of paintings, basically, for legitimate and not so legitimate reasons. And for me, living in Tauranga, I don't have great access to university libraries and archives. So for me, that was going to be one of the, you know, a fantastic bonus of being in Auckland. And the other frustrating thing is that I've got kind of lots of cases that I've been working on that are only halfway through because I'm trying to get information and answers from people, mainly actually in Europe. And of course, they've got more important things to think about than, you know, answering an email from a random art crime historian in New Zealand. And and it's really hard. And look, I think it's frustrating for many of them as well. I mean, I'm currently, well, I was working on a copy of a work by Artemisia Gentileschi, who's a fabulous Baroque female painter. And there's the copy that I'm interested in is actually in the Nottingham Museum collection. And they had done a wee bit of research for me. And then after, a lot of these places will do half an hour research for you, Jesse, and then they charge you. And I'd paid my £30 because the staff, I wanted them to look at the back of the painting because the back of a painting often can reveal a lot of information. But it's sort of in this holding pattern because the staff aren't in the building, so they can't get into storage to look at the back of the painting. So, you know, you get these cases half written up or researched, but you can't finish them off. And the other one is the one that you mentioned in your introduction about the Bruegel, the Younger crucifixion painting in Italy as well. I'm trying to get to the bottom of that because it's an interesting case. It's a work that was in a small church in a northern town in Italy, and they got wind of an art heist that someone or people were going to take this Bruegel crucifixion. And so what they did, very cunningly, they had a copy made and they put it in its place, and sure as eggs, just like clockwork, the art heist happened and the painting was stolen. But of course what the thieves actually took was a copy, and the only people in the know were the police who organised it, you know, in terms of the copy, etc., and the whole sort of setup. And the priest in the church, And it was timed. The thieves came in. They'd obviously been watching the priest because every sort of lunchtime he goes out and he gives communion to his parishioners who cannot make it to church. And the other person who knew was the mayor. So I found who the mayor was and found his email address and sent an email off a few weeks ago. But of course, again, you know, I haven't heard back because what I want to know is who made the copy that got stolen and where is it now? So, as I say, a wee bit frustrating. But yes, I was a week into my residency and then it was all over very quickly. I came home to Tauranga.
So loads of disadvantages, obviously, to doing what you do, but not being in Europe, where most of these major works are. Any advantages to being an art crime historian in New Zealand, based in New Zealand?
Absolutely. I mean, one of my books, the first book I wrote, was actually about New Zealand art crime. And that was a first. And I guess, you know, for me, it was really interesting. It sort of, I came across it, had a bit of an epiphany about art crime because it's something that a lot of people don't like to talk about. A lot of art historians don't like to talk about it or write about it. And I was doing some research around the New Zealand artist, the late New Zealand artist, Edward Bulmore, way back, you know, in 2004. And I came to the realization, having met his widow and his daughter, that there were a lot of outstanding works that were unaccounted for. In fact, all up there are 150 works by Edward Bulmore that are unaccounted for. And that sounds a huge number, and a lot of them were smaller sketches and works on paper, but there's still some significant works in there. And to me, it was a bit of a kind of, well, a bit of a jolt, really, that here we have a New Zealand artist and there are all these works that had been sold in the proceeds not handed on to the family, or they had been exchanged for goods and services, or they'd just been given away as gifts, etc. And so that kind of led me on this journey of looking at art crime in New Zealand. And way back, actually in 2013, I think it was Catherine Ryan interviewed me. Mm. And part of that, a whole lot of people contacted me, of course, about other stories, as they continue to do. And so that's how the first book came about, really. So, yeah, we definitely have an art crime story here. And it's not a disadvantage to being in New Zealand.
And probably, I certainly thought when, you know, under the banner art crime, we'd be talking about paintings being stolen from galleries, but there's much more to it than that. In fact, you have, you have quite a broad interpretation of it. I'm thinking about, and you've got so many great stories, I want to make sure we get this one in because people may be slightly familiar with it. The British artist Graham Sutherland's portrait of Sir Winston Churchill. What happened to that portrait?
Well, yeah, that portrait doesn't exist any longer. That's a really interesting case, and I'm sure a lot of listeners saw the particular episode of The Crown, the series where Graham Sutherland paints Winston Churchill's portrait. And that came about, the House of Commons and the House of Lords raised funds to have a portrait commissioned for Winston Churchill's 80th birthday. And it's interesting because when you read the biographies, written by Churchill's daughter and other books, the Winston Churchill and Clementine Churchill really engaged well with Graham Sutherland, who really was the portrait painter of the day. And on The Crown, you saw that as well. The three of them got on very nicely. In fact, Clementine referred to Sutherland as quite a dish. And so they had quite a nice time. And Sutherland and Churchill had a painting relationship because Churchill was a pretty good amateur artist himself and had taken lessons from Sutherland. So they had this correspondence and this relationship already. And so he sat for the portrait and the portrait was painted. And there is an image up on your website of the unveiling, the 80th birthday unveiling of the painting. Winston is there at the lectern and the curtains are pulled across of the painting. In fact, if you Google it, there's a lovely clip on YouTube of, you can actually see it because it was live on BBC. And Churchill looks at the painting and he says something like, yes, I guess you call this is what you call modern art. You know, in other words, you know, I'm going to accept it graciously, but it's really my kind of thing. And what is interesting is because that was really the last time, first and last time that portrait was seen. So they went back to Chartwell and Clementine decided to get rid of it. And in my second book about art crime, which is called Females in the Frame, I present four different scenarios of what happened to that painting, because various people have come forward with ideas of what happened to it, or, you know, said that they were involved in getting rid of it. What is known is that Clementine organised or orchestrated having that painting destroyed. And she didn't like it, and Winston didn't like it either, but I think perhaps she didn't like it more because it looks like, you know, he was 80 and he was of ill health, he was short, and he's painted sitting down. I mean, people at the time said it looks like he's sitting on the toilet. It just wasn't the image that especially Clementine wanted to preserve. She really saw him more as, you know, the gallant figure who had, you know, got through World War II, had done amazing things, etc. And, you know, we've just celebrated VE Day, and there was lots of images of him over the weekend, you know, in various news clips. And so she was really trying to protect that image. So the painting was destroyed. But what is interesting is that it wasn't the only image of him that she organised to have destroyed. There are two others that we know of, and one of them was actually in the Roosevelt Library in America, and it wasn't until I contacted them a couple of years ago, and they went back through the file, and they said, you're quite right. It's actually got written on the file card here that it was, you know, destroyed at, you know, her, she asked Franklin Roosevelt to have it destroyed, and it was. So, but the irony is that if she had just left it at the back of a cupboard, you know, no one would have thought much more about it. But there has been so much written and researched about this painting now, and so many various copies made of it, documentaries made, etc., you know, which is often the way when a work goes missing.
Another one people might remember is there was a painting of Christ and something happened to it, and the person responsible tried to repaint it themselves with quite unfortunate results.
Oh, that was in Spain, yes. Spain has actually had quite a bad run, and there's another example, another image up on the website, Jesse, of a wooden Holy Family sculpture dating from the 15th century. But yes, there are three cases that I cover in my book, actually, and they're all, well, I say restoration, but I'm doing inverted commas here, because, you know, there are... Yeah, that one that you talk about is a work that was actually a fresco, so painted directly onto the wall. And one of a local parishioner decided that she would give it a bit of a tidy up. And, of course, once she started and it got moist, it basically it literally started to kind of run and fall off the wall. Mm-hmm. And it is absolutely, you know, beyond repair. It's absolutely tragic because it was a beautiful portrait of Christ with his crown of thorns painted in the 1930s. What was sad was that the late artist's family had just raised the funds to have the work conserved, but the local priest gave this local woman, Cecilia, permission to go ahead and, you know, restore it, but in fact she wrecked it. Again, you know, what happened there was that it went viral on the internet, as things do now, and people thought it was, I guess, a huge joke, and they flocked to this tiny little town in Spain to see the work. There are photos online of it. In fact, so much so that Ryanair put on extra flights. What it meant was the economy, I know, you know, every cloud has a silver lining kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so the economy all of a sudden, which had been going through the floorboards of this town, was in, you know, was okay. And they made the T-shirts, the coffee mugs, everything. So Cecilia, who had actually wrecked this painting, and she got all upset when it, you know, went viral because everyone was having a go at her. And she was stressed and losing weight, et cetera, et cetera. All of a sudden, when she saw the money pouring in, she said, well, actually, I think I should have a percentage. You know, I should have royalty for those coffee cups, you know, kind of thing. So, but the one that I've got on your website, GC, is a, you know, it's really sad. If you look at it, it's absolutely, it's geared again by a local woman who decided to give it a bit of a jitter.
This is the wooden one, the sculpture.
The wooden one. Yeah, and it dates from the 15th century, which, you know, It's pretty old, especially, you know, when you look at things that we have in our churches and collections, you know, 15th century is getting on. And it's, you know, quite a naive little wooden sculpture. And it basically, it looks like now it's kind of, well, she had very limited paints, let's just say. You know, she's got Barbie pink and sort of lettuce green and a few others. And it looks terrible. I mean, yes, they could probably get some of that paint off, but it will have actually gone into the wood grain. That's the problem. Because the third case in Spain, in fact, was St. George and the Dragon. And someone also painted that and it turned out looking like Tintin. they've managed to get most of the paint off that, but you know what it highlights is the lack of money for conservation or for looking after objects in churches, and also the I guess the unawareness of the priests in some of these churches. They give permission. They think when someone comes forward and offers to restore a work, whether they've got any training or not or ability, they just think this is a lovely, you know, community gesture. You know, yes, please. But it's hasn't worked out.
Who else should we talk about in our time remaining? How about Joan Howard?
Oh yes. Joan Howard, or Joan the Tomb Raider, they call her. Joan is a Western Australian woman. I think she's probably in her 90s now. And during the 1960s and 70s, she was a diplomat's wife in the Middle East. And her hobby was going on archaeological digs. And she ended up with quite a collection, as you can see. Again, there's a photo on your website. She's holding a mask. And so she's ended up with quite a collection of objects from various digs. And a newspaper, the Western Australian newspaper, did a feature on her a few years ago. And again, there was an outcry, especially by the archaeologists, who said, this is appalling. All these works should be repatriated. They should be returned. I did a bit more digging, really. And what is interesting is that Joan, who is a former nurse, she was in the Middle East. And as I say, this was her hobby. And she went on official digs. And in those days, you know, an archaeologist might call for assistance and you'd go along and help. And as she explained in a archaeological journal later on in life, that often at the end of the day the archaeologists would take what they wanted for a particular museum or whatever, and you as the assistant might be offered to help yourself to anything left over. So that's how she came across, you know, having some of her objects. She also went to sales of objects and purchased them. And but of course, when she came back and when she showcased this collection a few years ago, as I say, there was an absolute outcry of what should happen to them. Some of them are in the museum in Perth as well, so they've gone to the right place. But it's that big, big question, what do you do with objects like this? Or in the case of, if we come back to New Zealand, and there is a photo also on the website, there was a case of a sculpture that was stolen from the Epsom Library in 2005, and it was eventually found in 2014, I think it was. Mm. But what do you do with it? And this was an interesting case. It was called Phoenix Rising, and it's a it's a large stainless steel, very shiny Phoenix Rising, if you can imagine it. And it used to be outside the Epsom Library. It was stolen in 2005. And then in 2014, someone was on the internet looking for real estate in the Central Plateau area. Yeah. And they came across this little house, and I've driven past it a few times now, in Rangitau, which is about 5 kilometres east of Hohokuni. And they, you know, when you go onto open homes on the internet and you look in all the rooms and have a bit of nosy, they went into this particular little holiday house and they saw this large shiny object in the corner of the room and thought, oh my God, there used to be something like that at the Epsom Library. And so they rang the police and the police go down there and sure enough, it is Phoenix Rising. But in the meantime, Epsom Library, they have had a new sculpture commissioned by Keith Simpson, the Auckland sculptor who made it. And so what do you do with the one that you found? And it's actually had a happy ending. It was at the Hohokuni police station for a long time because they went to see it there. And they asked me, they said, would you like to drive it back to Auckland for us? And I said, yeah, no, I don't think that's really the right thing to do. sure where I'm going to take it. But it's ended up, and I think this is really nice, this is a happy ending, it's ended up at Great Barrier Island outside the Community Arts Centre there, because that's actually where Keith Simpson lived when he made this work. So it's kind of gone full cycle, which is nice. But yeah.
Did someone get prosecuted for that?
No, because the house had changed many, many times, So, but, you know, really odd thing. I mean, there are a lot of other things found at the house, you know, skis and snowboards and things like that, but to actually find a sculpture. So, look, sometimes, you know, there is a happy ending. Things are found, but as I say, it is problematic. What do you do with them, especially when institutions, for example, end up finding out that they've actually got forged works and their collection? What do they do with them? You know, they can't put them back on out on the open market, because that's just passing, you know, your problem on to someone else. It's, you know, it's just not fair. It's not ethical. So it certainly, you know, is a problem.
While we're in New Zealand, you wanted to mention an exhibition at Waikato Museum.
Yes, yes. 2 years ago, I curated an exhibition for Waikato Museum, and called An Empty Frame, Crimes of Art in New Zealand. And Phoenix Rising was right in the centre there. And it was really about not just highlighting that we do have an art crime history in New Zealand, but also about awareness and education, that sometimes something might not quite be as it appears. And it was, for me, one of the difficult things was finding a work. There was a painting I wanted to include in it called Welcome Morsels by Leonard Nightingale. It's a Victorian painting that's in the Christchurch Art Gallery collection. And though that's not, hasn't been a victim of an art crime at all, I wrote a column about it a long time ago. Back in the 90s when I worked at Christchurch Art Gallery, I had a fortnightly column in the newspaper where I'd highlight a work from the collection. And this particular week, I'd written about this painting. It's a very sentimental Victorian painting of a little girl feeding cabbage leaves to the goats. Well, it could be sheep. Anyway, one or the other. It's on your website. And so I wrote the article, et cetera, and about how it came to New Zealand, et cetera, et cetera. And then I got to work, and I had two irate phone calls that day by two people who said, the first one I just thought, oh, look, you get these calls, you know. They said, look, how dare you put my painting in the newspaper without permission? I said, no, it belongs to the gallery. No, I have one on my wall. Okay, you know, that's lovely. And anyway, then not long after, I got a second call, very similar, and I thought, well, this is odd. So I went and visited both these people. Sure enough, they both had copies of Welcome Morsels. And so it turned out that they'd had, I think, grandmothers who had been to the art school in Christchurch. And as a, you know, an apprentice artist, you often get to paint, copy, you know, the old masters. And in this case, they would go across the road to the Robert McDougall Art Gallery in the Botanic Gardens and copy something in there. And that's exactly what had happened. So I thought, jump forward to 2016. Wouldn't this be nice to have in the exhibition to show that sometimes, you know, you have legitimate copies of works, you know, it's not criminal. And so I thought, well, how am I going to find them? And I contacted the press, and they said they would, and where the original story had been, and they said they would only run the story if I spilled the beans about another case. And I said, well, I haven't got any beans to spill, so they dried up. So then I went to the Star, the opposition, you know, and they said, yes, they'd run the story, which they did, but without an image. They forgot to put the image in. So, of course, no one contacted me. So then I thought, oh, my last try. So then I wrote a letter to the editor of the press with the image, and they ran the story. Anyway, nothing happened. And then about 3 weeks later, I got an email, and it just had in the subject line, I've got your painting, and then a phone number. I thought, this is intriguing. So I rang, and they said,
just so you know, we've got about a minute left, Penelope.
Okay.
So, yep.
Absolutely. Anyway, it was a woman ringing. She'd been reading the paper at her GP's, and she saw the painting. She thought, I know who owns that. It was her friend in Timaru. And that's the painting to the right-hand side of the real one. Huh. And the photo on your website. So it was found, but that was what that exhibition was about.
I'd encourage people to go take a look at the website, where there are plenty of things that Penny has been talking about for you to view. And Penny, man, you've got so many good stories. We'll have to do a part two sometime soon. I'm sorry that we've run out of time, but I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Bye.
Penny Jackson, who's our Monday expert, who's been talking about art crime.